home of the stars, through the airwaves and on the big screen. Live from Hollywood, it's Rated LGBT Radio with your hosts, Garrett Miller and Rob Watson.
And I'm Rob, and Garrett is nowhere to be found tonight. Well, no, he's somewhere to be found, just not with me. I was joking off air too with my fabulous guest. Oh my God, you guys, you are in for such a treat tonight. Julia Scotti, who was a finalist on America's Got Talent, which, you know, they should have been winner. I'm not a follower of the show, although I see snippets of it, but a fabulous comedian who speaks to a certain age bracket that, don't tell her this, but I am approaching that age bracket myself. We're not going to talk about that. But I also off the air told her how nervous I was because I'm the guy who has to push the buttons tonight since Garrett is off. And if you listen last week to that disaster, you'll know that that is not my forte. So tonight I'm so far so good. I've been doing better. So let me press my magic button here and see if I can do fantastically and bring Julia on to the show. There you are.
I'm here. I'm bouncing off satellites all over the universe. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. Your voice is on the air. My voice is on the air. We're here.
I'm so proud of you, Rob Watson.
Oh, well, thank you for pushing buttons.
Hey, I won't even go there. So how are you?
I'm good. And now, Julia, I have to tell you, you are the one woman in the world that I am ever going to attempt this with. I am going to let you make me into a straight guy tonight.
Ooh.
There you go. Was my attempt at stand-up comedy humor. So,
do you want to know what I'm wearing, Rob? What are you wearing?
Okay, that went too far.
Okay.
Too straight.
All right.
Why do we use that word straight for heterosexuals, by the way? It's like I'm asking you as a representative of the heterosexual community now.
I'm not heterosexual. I identify as a lesbian.
Oh, you do? Oh, I'm sorry.
So
I do have to explain to people that I am such a Julia Scotti pig that I have not only invited you to be a guest on my show tonight. See, Garrett, it's now my show. Leave you, you snooze, you lose. My show tonight, but I'm also having you on my other show out in Santa Cruz on October 29th. You'll be my guest there as well, but I've warned people that on that show that's rated G because it's FCC controlled. And tonight we're going to do Julia Scotti unplugged, unvarnished, uncensored.
She's raw. I'm doing this show totally in the nude, even as we speak.
There we go. Hey, everybody get naked.
Okay,
everybody
yay.
Listening, get naked. We're going to do naked radio right now. So
except for Anthony Weiner, not him. We know what he looks like. Do you know
what? All right. In your bits, what are your favorite things to talk about? Do you like going to the public arena with the different politicians and that type of thing? Not that any of them are the least bit able to be made fun of at this point.
I tend to save that for Facebook and these days you could get assaulted in a club if you start talking about the candidate whose name shall not be spoken. My act is not really like that. I talk about basically about stuff that bothers the hell out of me usually, and just observing life as absurd as it is.
I love it because I'm running up against age discrimination, even though I'm only 23. But and by the way, where's the Swapland commercial? It's But anyway,
well, I'm only a couple of years older than I'm only 26 myself.
I know. See, the fountain of youth just springs eternal. But yeah, you know,
I've got a Benjamin Button thing going on here. So. In reverse.
I kind of do too. You know, with Botox, it's like it's Benjamin Button Botox. There you go for branding.
There you go. That's a great name though, isn't it?
It is totally. So
sounds like a J.K. Rowling novel.
You had a long comedian career, but you got that sort of oh my god, she was just discovered yesterday by being on a certain program. Do you want to tell us about that?
Yeah, I started out in stand up in 1980, actually May 31st, 1980, and I was Rick Scotty for the first 20 years of my career. And so I did it up until 2000, and I decided I was getting older and I didn't want to, you know, wind up like some of my comic friends, you know, living in a refrigerator box on the Lower East Side. And so I decided to go back to college. And as we all know, college corrupts absolutely. And in my senior year, I came to realize that I was transgendered. And so, you know, after graduation, I became a teacher. I taught as Julia. And then I did that for 7 years. And I left there. And about 2011, a friend of mine, you know, cajoled me into going back on stage as Julia. And, it was a scary opportunity, but it was an opportunity nonetheless. And that was the beginning of it. And here I am corrupting Americans all over the place.
Well, now I have to tell you that I've watched the video of your initial appearance on American like numerous times because there are a couple of those videos. I don't watch that show in its various iterations around the world that much, but I do catch it when sensational things happen. And the ones that have just brought me to tears were when Susan Boyle did it and she walked out, you know, older lady. And you could just watch the tone of everybody in the audience. It was over in Britain and, you know, everybody was like, oh, what's she doing? Oh my, oh my. And then boom, she lets out this voice and everybody is blown away and standing ovation. And you had kind of a moment like that too. Although I think they, you know, they thought, oh, pretty girl, you know, we'll see, but you blew them away with your comedy. So first of all, what was that like, that part like?
It was scary, you know, because there were two things that I was concerned about. One was dropping the F-bomb, which I wasn't going to do originally. And believe it or not, the producer said, go ahead, you know, and give it a shot. And the other obviously was the reveal that I was transgendered. And I wanted to do that after my set because I didn't want, you know, I didn't want people to judge me for being transgendered. I wanted them to judge me for being a comedian. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say though, you know, that you watch the video and it's a great video and it's been watched by 1,200,000+ people. You know, it's like just a little less than the, you know, this show is heard by roughly that amount of people, give 1,200,000 people.
Give or take.
So that many people have watched it because it is a great video. It is a great success story. It is a great comedic bit, everything else. But when I watched it, I saw something a little bit different from my perspective in that video. And that is that you go on, you do this fantastic set, everybody, you have them eating out of your hands. They are all over it, love it, fantastic set. And then comes the after discussion. And Howie Mandel is asking you questions. He's like, you know, so what got you into this? And that's when the reveal happens, where, you know, you reveal, you know, I used to be Rick Scotty. And boom, it's like not in a bad way, but the whole setting changed. you saw it on their faces. They were like, wow, we had no idea, da 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 da, and everything else. And for me, that was very intriguing for a couple of reasons. One, this label came down and wrapped itself around you like instantly, mm-hmm. even though your accomplishment had already been had just based on who you were, not mm-hmm. based on any label. And then for me, it was sort of like wake up moment between the identity of being transgender and for me being gay. Because if I walked out there, first of all, no one would have laughed. But, you know, and God forbid I went out there and sang, because then everybody would have laughed. But,
you know, you might have won.
But if I'd walked out there and done something fantastic, they would have said, well, tell us about yourself. And I said, well, you know, I used to have a partner and he and I adopted our kids and oh, you're gay. Da, da, da. From then on, everything that defining me as gay would have been a reveal of my real life.
Right.
All of a sudden, what I was seeing was people looking at you and they were trying to see your past. They weren't seeing you who you are now anymore. Because you were
that happens when you're transgendered and people don't know you're transgendered. And then you finally tell them that you are, that you suddenly start to look for remnants of your past.
Right.
And I feel like, you know, those butterflies they find in amber, you know, oh, look, here's something from the Paleozoic age. And so they deconstruct me as a person. And I think a lot of trans people go through that. My goal was, in doing it the way I did it, I knew that was going to happen, but I wanted them to question themselves, you know, by saying, well, why did I suddenly change the way I think about this person? You know, Shemaine, and it worked.
Well, I'm doing it for them. It's like, Howie, Mel, you know, Simon, is like, question that now, because it was, they were wonderful. It was positive. There was nothing negative, but all of a sudden it was just so intriguing to me. You know, the next day,
my, you know, when all the press started coming out, my new name was transgender comedian Julia Scotti. You know, I was no longer just Julia Scotti.
That's the thing that bugs me. Not that, you know, it's a bad adjective, and, you know, in a certain way, you know, the fact that you're a role model and a public figure, and we need, you know, somebody who's got her head on straight to represent transgender people based on certain other Caitlin.
No, don't mention any names, but
I didn't say a word to Jenner. It's like, you know, but you know, it, but that being what it may, it's like, why define it? I mean, I used to be an actor before I went into high tech, and uh-huh. you know, if I tell that to somebody in the business world, they don't go, oh, this is Rob Watson, communication expert who used to be a Hollywood actor, who tried to be a Hollywood actor and failed. You know, I mean, it's like that, just because we lived something one way doesn't mean it needs to be part of our current definition.
Well, I you know, I kind of liken it to, and I don't mean it's believe me, they're two divergent paths, but I kind of liken it back to when the civil rights movement started in the 60s. And Lenny Bruce did a bit about, you know, how everybody wanted a black friend. And I'm kind of like that now. Trans people are sort of like that now. Granted, our history is totally different, and I wasn't trying to make it analogous. But you know, people will say, oh, this is my friend Julie. She's transgender. It's like, you know, I don't say this is my friend, you know, Roxanne. She's Jewish. I don't say things like that. Well, you know. But they feel the need. It makes them feel better, I guess. I don't know. I don't know what it is. It's a curiosity thing, I think.
Yeah. It's kind of bizarre. I mean, it's like if you and I went to a restaurant and the waiter came up and was like, you know, my friend here, Julia, who's going to order, and Julia's transgender. I mean, I would give you complete permission to turn to the waiter and say, oh, yeah, and my friend Rob's going to order now. And, oh, by the way, he's got the penis that he had in his diapers. You know?
Yes. I don't know what it is. I think it's because, you know, people, I talk about this in my act, people look at us like we're a new species. You know, like we were discovered in the Amazon rainforest, you know, with us. And they don't know that we've been around since the beginning of time. In one form or another.
Yeah,
this is not, you know, it's not a new, I say nature, there's not just one kind of flower. There's millions of different kinds of flowers and some we haven't even discovered yet. I'm one of those flowers.
Absolutely. And I have some very close friends who have had a similar experience to what you have. Let's just put it that way. And I've every one of you that has gone through that, I actually find myself putting on a pedestal of heroism. And I say that not just because it is brave to stand out in public and say, this has been my experience and get the reactions that you do, but also I feel you guys blazing trails for many other of us in lesser experiences, but in a parallel type of thing. For example, for me being a gay dad, I have had to fight the genderism of being a male parent because it's so, our society is so based on the hallowed idea of the female parent, the mom, and, you know, motherhood is revered. And I mean, even in a language where if you say, okay, you know, oh, she's mothering a child, you get she's nurturing the child, she's caring for the child. If you say, right. Oh, he fathered a child, he donated the sperm. That's what it
right.
means.
Yeah, it you is know, minimized. I'll grant you that. Having been on both sides of the fence, I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah, so it's the, you know, I've had to stand up and say, you know, this is my experience, or this is who I am as a dad, and I'm competent. I'm able to be a full-fledged emotional, you know, parent. And there is a physiological change because they've actually studied the gay dad brains, and our brains literally morph into this two-sided parenting brain type thing. So,
it's funny you mention that, because I don't know if you're familiar with the science, you know, of transgender and transgenderism, but they found that when they've done autopsies on trans folks, that their brains do match the physiological similarities to a cis female brain.
Didn't know that for a fact, but that doesn't surprise me at all, because why else? I mean, it's not like you rolled over that day in college and went, I'm bored today.
Oh my God, but I was accused of that. I had a relative, she used to be very close, like a sister to me. And she was one of the first people I came out to. And she said to me, well, you're just doing this for attention. I go, you gotta be kidding me. I said, people stand on the Brooklyn Bridge stark naked and sing, you know, anchors away for attention. This is a little bit more than that, you know.
It's like I'm really, really committing to my attention need here.
Yeah, I am such an attention whore. Oh, speaking of, here's Katie, my cat.
Oh, it's like, hello, Katie. You're on the radio.
She doesn't care. She just wants her belly scrunched.
And
she doesn't
that
care
is a
what
cat.
Gender I am.
So let's move into Julius Scotty World Commentator. Actually, before we do that, I do want to ask you one background question. Is
sure.
Now, when you went into stand up, who were the ones that you looked up to and said, "That's I want to be them. I want to do what they're doing on stage."
I've been a fan and student of comedy since I was seven. So, I mean, my history with comedy goes back to Laurel and Hardy, Abbott and Costello, Chaplin. Late in the years when I got into it, it was Lenny Bruce, obviously, Robert Klein, and of course, George Carlin, just as God to me. So, I mean, those were my, those were my, you know, role model. And Woody Allen, believe it or not, Woody Allen's stand-up was pretty funny.
Well, you're, I mean, your cultural area of coming from New Jersey is, well, he was, what, let me ask that, being a California boy, you know, what is the difference of sensibilities between a Manhattan comic and a New Jersey comic?
Not much. I mean, I grew up on just on the other side of the Hudson River. So we were like the, you know, another borough of New York, and it's an urban area. So, I mean, it was, you know, the same, very similar experiences growing up. And plus my family was from the Bronx. So I spent, you know, a good deal of time in New York, and I, you know, so there really isn't much difference. The only difference I would think I would say is that Jersey comics had a self-esteem issue. And it's funny because you look at the people that have come from New Jersey. Bill Maher is from there. Jon Stewart is from there. A guy named Rick Overton, who's a very, very funny guy, is from there. I mean, a lot of really well-known comics came out of Jersey.
Now, what about the female stand-up comics? Do you have any of them that were impactful for you, or currently you see sort of role model like?
That's a great question, because I always loved Moms Mabley. I just found her, she just didn't give a rat's ass what she said. And I don't know if you're familiar with Moms Mabley, but boy, was just one of
I am, but
people.
I have to tell you, there, you know, our millennial audience just went, huh?
Well, look her up, because she'll have you laughing your ass off.
You'll love her YouTube videos.
Yeah, there's some great stuff with her. And, you know, it's funny because as a male comic, I kind of gravitated toward the other male comics. Like, I'm kind of blessed that way. And I did have a male sensibility in my delivery. The character I did as Rick Scotty was kind of based on my father, because I was never very good at being male. And so I didn't really know how to be male.
Right.
And so I emulated my father, who was just loud and obnoxious and just annoying. And when I, you know, went through this whole thing and decided I was going to try stand up again, I really said to myself, I can't do the same character. But I wound up adapting it to my mother's voice, you know, just, you know, because she was kind of crazy. And I suddenly, all of this anger and frustration and, kind of not regret for having wasted all those years, but I just had all this anxiety I had to unleash on stage, and it took it shaped my comedy into what it is.
Well, it's very, very funny. What themes are your favorite to play out on stage?
Oh yeah. I think I like calling bullshit. When I see bullshit, I just I make a note. This is bullshit, and I'm going to talk about it because I can't keep my mouth shut. It's why I kept getting into trouble in high school and grammar school, because there's something about people who are just lying to me that I can't stand.
You know, it's funny. When you said that, that's sort of a through line from my writing too, because I write these Gay Dad Sounds Off columns, and they're usually calling bullshit on somebody to their face. That's the point of my column. So I'm in your bullshit calling camp. So what, give us like the top three bullshit needed callings right this week.
The top three. Trump.
Well, you're the guest. You get to you can tell me.
Trump,
now.
Trump, Trump, and Trump. I think there's enough bullshit there that you could devote an entire show to
it. Or an hour. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's stunning. It's stunning the amount of bullshit that comes out of that man and his surrogates. Kayleigh McInerney, I think is her name. She's this.
She's his campaign.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
She's on CNN all the time. You could have video of Trump crucifying Jesus And she would say that's, you know, but he had a, you know, but Hillary Clinton turned him in. You know, she just can't admit that this guy is out of his friggin' mind.
Okay, I've got it. You actually made me think of one of his surrogates that I did some tweeting this week about the bullshit. So I'm loving to hear your opinion on this one. Rudy Giuliani said that Hillary Clinton was too stupid to be president because she didn't know that Bill Clinton was having an affair. Rudy Giuliani, who cheated on his wife and ended up marrying his affairlet, opinion of the people who didn't catch on to him.
It's amazing. I forgot Rudy's wife's name that he was cheating on, but she was a
Donna.
Newscaster here. What was her name?
Yeah, Donna.
Donna. I know you mean Donna. Yeah. He completely humiliated her. She was on local news here at the time, I think, when all of that happened. So for him to, you know, throw stuff. Yes, major bullshit. Plus, Rudy, I don't know what the hell happened to him, but he's gotten crazy in his old age. I actually liked him, you know, as a mayor. And when 9/11 happened, he was, you know, he was there for it. Well, a fact that he's never let us forget. But you see him now, he looks like he's jacked up on something. He's got these bug eyes. He's screaming. He's just, holy cow, take it down a notch, Rudy.
Yeah, well, it's well, just the company he's keeping is sort of like, okay, sanity check here. Yeah.
Yeah,
you know, turn your meds in at the door, and then you get to join us. Yeah, you know?
Yeah, it scares me. It truly does scare me, Rob, that there's even a chance that he could be elected. It's frightening to me. Truly frightening.
Do you find that inhibiting in terms of doing comedy about Donald Trump? That it's not something we can just laugh at, really, because it is so scary.
You know what? There's what they used to say. Will Rogers used to say. I never met a man I didn't like. And Will Rogers was a political pundit, and your audience can look him up too. But Will Rogers wouldn't have liked this guy. He just, you know, and audiences are, his devotees are just rabid in their devotion to him, and to the point where they don't hear what he's actually saying. That's the frightening part about this. There's an acceptance of him. He even said it. I mean, he could stand in the middle of Fifth Avenue and shoot somebody, and they'd still vote for him. And that's true.
And I do think that is a little bit of the situation around Donald Trump that makes it difficult. Is the real scary part is not, as you just said, not Trump himself. It's really that he's being followed, that people are giving such bandwidth to him on this nonsense. It's
look, I have voted in my life. I have voted Republican, Democrat, and Independent. I am not. I'm an independent thinker, and I listen to what everybody says, and I make my decision based on that. I can't imagine how anybody who saw the debates the other night. Could, you know, I mean, he said nothing. How do you still cling to that?
I have to tell you, this is my true confession. And, our 1,200,000, give or take 1,200,000 viewers can turn their radios down. But I didn't watch the debate. I'm chicken. I am so chicken. I cannot emotionally handle presidential debates. It started with Gore Bush because I just freak out at them. I can't take.
Really?
I watch the clips afterwards, but to sit for 90 minutes and have that anxiety, I just can't do it.
I'm that way with coyotes. We just got cut. Yeah, no, I'm scared to death of coyotes. We have coyotes here now in Jersey, and I live in a wooded area. I'm afraid to come home at night. And, you know, like I have this electric garage door opener, and I open it like a half a block away, and I'm in the garage, and before I'm even in the garage, I hit the button to shut the door because I'm afraid of coyotes. So I get I get what you're saying. You know, I understand.
I can't make fun of you because it's like I have this horrible, ill-fated vision of at the end of your life, you know, you surrounded by a pack of coyotes and people saying, oh my God, she was right. She was right.
Yeah. She was mauled by a coyote. Yeah.
Oh. So what other things are you afraid of that come into your comedy act?
Oh God, I'm afraid of, I don't trust dolphins. I have trust issues. I don't, because I feel like, you know, yes, they can communicate, and I always feel like they're talking about me when I'm like, if I was standing there, they give you that look, you know, like they're smiling at you, but you know, they're saying in whatever dolphin language they're talking about, what a putz. Yeah. You know?
Okay. I'm making a note here. Find the dolphin that screwed Julia over so we can have
as a child.
Got to find out what that story was about. Yeah.
Oh God. I have some irrational fears. I'm a little strange when it comes to that. Yeah. I have this thing about rats. I don't like rats. I don't think
many people would find that an irrational fear. I mean, you know, I'll sum it up in one word, Ben.
Yes. Well, no, even before that, Willard, the first Willard.
Oh, Willard. No. Actually, that was it. Yeah, you're right. I
saw that movie at a drive-in movie. Back when they had those, look them up again, audience, drive-in movies. And I would not get out of my car.
I'm so back on having them look up drive-in movies. Oh, you know, that is one thing the youngsters of today really miss. Drive-in movies that was an experience. So
I think it's where most of us lost our virginity.
It's
like, oh, okay. Well,
I was a very, 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 very late bloomer. But, and,
were you?
Yeah.
Me too.
Yeah. Well, I think I need to take control of this radio show. This has gone in a very bad direction.
All right. Let's get back on track.
Okay. All right. Okay. So dolphins and where do you come down on the spider versus snake controversy?
Ooh. Well, I look at it this way. I can step on a spider and you know, and kill it. I can't step on a snake. I could, but it doesn't necessarily mean I'm going to kill it, you know.
Right. No. I am right there with you in both camps. You know, I'm cool with spiders. My sons freak out, which is, I actually love that, to tell you the truth, because, you know, even at 14, they still freak out at spiders, and it's daddy. And it's like, I love that. So I come in and I'm
like, you love terrorizing your kids.
Spider. You know, but if they bring a snake home, I will lose it. I will just lose it. Me and Indiana Jones.
How often do they bring home a snake?
They don't, but they could, because the flip side of it is, while they are terrified of those little spiders, they love snakes, both of them. And so,
really? Interesting.
Oh, ugh, yeah, yeah.
And you have tons of them out there, right? In Cal- we have them here, too.
I'm in the redwoods, and they do down south, but not so much. And we actually have, ironically, some really dangerous spiders that I should probably be a little more worried about up here in the woods. But yeah, so
we have the brown recluse spider here, which you would think by its very name wouldn't come out very much and bite you, but apparently. It's not as reclusive as we thought.
See, I think the women's movement should look to the insect population and take on some of the power PR around that. I mean, we've got Black Widow and, you know, the female praying mantis,
right.
Which is, you know, it's like women are so empowered as insects.
They are. Yes, you're right. I never thought of that. That's a great point to make. I'm always somewhat at odds at the feminist community. As trans people, we are sometimes at odds you know, most women, I'd say 95% of the women out there just have been so accepting. But there's that one element that will never, ever, ever take us into the fold. And so I always approach them with gentle.
Well, let me ask you about one of them. What is your opinion of Jermaine Greer?
You must have read my mind.
hey,
I was
stunned. When we went to the snakes and spider thing, I knew kindred spirit here.
You knew we were heading for Jermaine Greer. I have total respect for what Jermaine Greer did, you know, in terms of, you know, the women's movement. I think I have more disdain for Dame Edna, because I found out that he's in the same Jermaine camp. I was shocked at that. Did you know about him?
I had no idea.
Oh, he's a big old homophobe. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah, look him up. I'm telling you, it'll blow your mind.
Hold that. I have to go tell the staff. Cancel Dame Edna. She's off the list. No, not going to talk to her. Okay, sorry.
Persona non grata.
I know. It's like bump Bill Clinton up a week. It's fine. It's cool.
Right.
Okay. Right,
but yeah, Jermaine Greer. She's not alone in that feeling of not thinking. And I get that. Everybody's entitled to their opinion. I just want to get through life. That's my philosophy. If you don't like me,
One thing I've noticed, because I've written a lot on transgender issues. I've written about. I have a friend who is transgender in Nigeria, and she lives pretty much stealth because the people around her don't know that she is transgender. And if they did, she could be actually in danger. Another friend here several friends, transgender male. I don't know why I'm going through my laundry list here, which
That's
has
okay.
now distracted from my point. I had a point before I went through checklist.
Well, was it about the dangers of being transgender?
I don't remember what. Thank you. It wasn't that. It was one thing that I have noticed in the public discourse on the transgender issues is there are several areas where in discussing things, you can be damned if you do, damned if you don't. In other words, some transgender people take offense, some don't. Then there's a debate. What has been your experience with that? Have you been confronted by other transgender people saying, Julia, you did this very bad?
No, I haven't. I mean, I'm very conscious of how I present to the public, and I understand that because of the show, a lot of people look to me as, you know, whether I want it or not, they look to me as, you know, some sort of example.
Right.
It's something I take lightly. My goal was twofold on the show. It was to show the straight world, cis world, that I'm just like you, but it was also to let people who might be struggling with this in their lives know that it's okay, that you can be what you are and still be successful at it. And that was my goal coming back into comedy. The two things I consciously decided when I came back was to be totally truthful and fearless up there. And my comedy sort of reflects that, I think. So if somebody disagrees with what I've said or done, I'm sorry. You know, I can't please everybody. I'm like Ricky Nelson, you know. Look him up too. So. Garden Party.
Yeah. Look him up and just stare into his eyes for a while.
His eyes, he had beautiful eyes.
Oh my God.
But yeah, so I mean I can't worry about what people think I'm doing. If you don't like what I'm doing, then do something else. And do what you want to do. You know?
Well, one area where, and this is one example that I was doing some writing on, and I actually got some backlash around was I've done a couple pieces around families whose toddlers were very quick to inform their parents that mm-hmm. they were not the gender that the parents thought they were. Mm-hmm. And the parents reacted immediately and have children, these two children, to allow them to be who they feel they are, who they know themselves to be, and to very positive effect. And the apparently there are studies that have shown that a lot of the negative effects that people who come out as transgender later in life experience when children come out and are supported, that those don't happen. Anyway, I wrote these articles and I got some backlash from adult transgender people that were not thrilled that I was highlighting that.
What was their complaint?
That they felt that it was it's probably not fair for me to articulate because I don't quite understand the negative, but just that it was sort of focusing on these kids that first of all, it wasn't the choice of the children to be focused on. They were not standing up saying, you know, I want you to write an article, or understanding what that really meant. They actually were. The kids were actually, we're going to write an article. Yay. You know, but, or we're going to do a video, or, and the article is like the most minimal thing that was happening around these kids. But it was sort of like it was, you know, people were oohing and aahing over these kids who are transgender rather than focusing on some of the more horrific issues that adult transgender people face. Like there was some sort of jockeying of attention.
Okay.
I'm probably misstating the feedback, but it was along that kind of thinking.
Well, I, you're never going to please everyone. And yes, coming out as an adult is probably 1,000 times harder than coming out as a child. You know, when you think about it, if a child comes out at 5 years old, they haven't had all that life experience to kind of wreck them, you know, psychologically. So they're just being what children always are, is totally honest about what they feel. And for a parent to, you know, to understand that in a loving way, that's a beautiful thing. Are there problems with coming out as an adult? You betcha. That's sound like Sarah Palin. You betcha. But I mean, it was hard for me to even say it out loud to myself in the mirror. And then I had to tell my children, and I lost them in my life for, you know, almost 14 years. But when you know something to be true in your heart, you can't turn your back on it because it will always come up and bite you in the ass. You can't escape your own truth. You just can't.
Right. Right. Now, you said you lost them for 14 years. Does that mean that you have come around there? You've come around. The situation has come around.
It's an amazing turnaround. Yeah. They are back in my life again. My youngest son is a stand-up comic. He's a baby comic. Yeah, he's been at it for about 2 years now. And my daughter is an agent. She's mentoring. She's working for a talent agency and learning the business. So yeah, it's been quite a ride.
Wow. Wow. So, going back to the name that I actually did not mention at all, but let me pull it out of a hat. Caitlyn Jenner. Caitlyn came out and basically publicly adopted Ted Cruz as he was the candidate that she was going to be the transgender emissary to, you know, and he was going to teach him. So not I'm taking Hillary off the table. You were going to pick one of the former wannabe presidential candidates and you were going to be their transgender emissary, which one would it be and why? And how would you, what would you do with them?
You mean of the Republicans
or any of them? But you pick them. Which one, whichever one you think needed it the most.
I would have, if it had been Elizabeth Warren, if she had run, I wouldn't have to explain anything to her.
Right.
Neither would I have to explain anything to Bernie. You know, they would have both been welcoming and understanding, I think. You know, God, dear God, did she really want to be Ted Cruz's liaison?
Oh, yeah. Oh, she thought he was so nice. Oh, she was.
Oh, my God.
Oh, to this day. I mean, she is still not in Camp Hillary. I mean, she's.
Oh, no, she won't.
All I know is she's voting for Trump, you know.
It's I can't even. I can't even go there. I don't know what to say. I don't know what to say. I think the bulk of the trans community feels that way about that person because she hasn't got the experience, the life experience of you know, the real transgendered experience. I mean,
right.
There are people out there, you know, who struggle mightily to get through this, who don't have the money, who don't have the support, who don't have anything. You know, I was one of them. I was going through my transition my first year as a teacher. And the very first day I was teaching school ever, but I did a great job. And at the end of the day, I found a note on my desk that said, "Everybody here thinks you're a man." It's the first day of school.
Oh, my God.
And as a teacher. I almost didn't go back. I was devastated. You know, I thought I had done a good job. And so those kinds of things are things that the person, Caitlin, will never, ever understand. Ever.
Right. Right. So that kind of feeling, that kind of experience, what happens with that when you turn to the stage? Where do you take that? And or do you, is that in filed away in a different place for you?
This experience is transformational. It shows the best of people and the worst of people. And internally for myself, it's made me so much more understanding about how people think and feel. And nevertheless, there's an element of anger. There's an element of sarcasm. And then there's that element of calling bullshit that I have to address. And so, you know, my anger comes out on stage sometimes, but it's never directed at people who I feel don't deserve it.
Oh, yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah,
you know, I never
Okay, I can think of one person that, you know, it's like, that poor girl in the Titanic. Now, come on.
You should, I don't know if they know the bit, but it's a bit about how being old, you know, people expect things of you. And like, if I were on a sinking ship, and, you know, in those movies, there's always that young girl that, you know, wants to switch places, and I'm supposed to be noble and say, you know, take my place on the boat. That is, I'm a big movie buff. So you've seen that scene in any number of, you know, movies that same similar type of scene. And I think, you know, I just, again, calling bullshit. you know, I don't care how old you are. The last thing you want to do is, you know, jump on a sinking ship into icy water and die. <You know? laughs> I'm sorry. I might think about it if it were a kid. You know, I definitely would switch if it were a kid, but not a young girl.
I was not trying to guilt you.
No. I would do it for. Yeah. I would do it for a kid, absolutely. Or if it was a really small kid, I would hold on to it in the lifeboat.
Yeah. So I was thinking it would be fun if, you know, like we did a thing at a hotel and we made you like Carly Fiorina's roommate for a night or something. You know, it's like,
oh my God, me or you?
Or you?
The three of us. Oh, Carly Fiorina's roommate. What the hell? You have way too much free time on your hands, right? What would I do in a room with Carly Fiorina?
I mean, you guys would be like, you know, I don't know, you know, doing, you know, like doing your nails and, you know, whatever.
Is she drunk? Are we drunk?
What you could, hey, you're the emissary. You could get her drunk. You know, it's like, you know.
What if she woke up next to me? We woke up in the bed the next morning. If something like that happened, well, that would be.
I think that would be fascinating and wonderful. And boy, would that have turned the campaign on the ear? I mean, it would.
I think so. You know, Carly seems a little uptight. You know, maybe I'll give her a call. We'll just say, come on, babe, let's just go out. Come on.
I don't think she's doing anything right now, to tell you the truth.
Yeah,
so,
we'll grab a couple of brewskis. Yeah.
Yeah.
I like her because she's tough. I like her for the same reason I love Elizabeth Warren. I mean, if I would marry Elizabeth Warren tomorrow if she would have me.
Yeah. Well, I think she's married, right?
I know, maybe but not. I don't care.
I actually didn't know, but I was speculating.
She's married, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, married, oh. Yeah. No. Breaks
oh,
my
darn.
Heart.
Yeah. Well, there's divorce, although that probably wouldn't help her.
Yeah, I can dream. I can dream.
Yeah, exactly. So, I have the elephant in the room, not the Republican Party, but the other elephant in the room that I would be bereft not getting your feedback on. Restrooms, the restroom issue.
Ah, the restroom issue. I pitched this idea to my manager. I said, let's get a film crew, and let's go on the Let My People Pee tour, and I'll just go right up and down the I-95, which runs down the coast, and just hit restrooms all over the South. And just I'll go pee, I'll come out, and I'll do some time, and we'll move on to the next one.
You need
I think
to
it's
do
crazy.
That. Oh my God, you need to do that.
I would love to do that.
Yeah, it's like you and Chaz Bono and, it's like just, get like five of you and, go into the restrooms and have conversations with people. It's like, it's like I'm in the proper restroom. How you doing?
It's so ridiculously stupid. And I talk about that in my act, too. And, their big concern is that we're going to be molesting their kids, and we all know there's not one recorded instance of a trans person ever molesting anybody in a bathroom. Plenty of instances of senators and, religious people and Bill Cosby.
Technically, and I'm not trying to represent the other side, but technically their point is not the transgender people will do it, but that some child molester will use that as an excuse that he can be in there to do that. However, the people who are speculating on that, I don't think have ever actually been in a woman's room, because they always talk about how the person is going to essentially pull his thing out at a urinal and shock a little girl. And it's like, okay, urinal, women's room, hello.
Yeah. Where are you going? I gotta tell you though, when I was transitioning, and I had to start using the ladies room, and it's a very intimidating experience, it took me a good year to feel comfortable. So I seriously doubt that a child molester dressing up in drag with the intention of molesting somebody would have a difficult time even getting aroused.
There's so many. First of all, that isn't how the majority of child molesters operate, which is
right.
One piece of information I needed to know as a parent, which is, child molesters get close to your families, like, I don't know, a priest. And
right.
Get familiar and that's the main MO. They don't, come barraging into restrooms. But I have to tell you one quick story is, you should have hung out with us, the gay dads, and we would have helped you out with that restroom thing. Because my partner and I, when first son was a baby, they have no changing things in men's rooms. They're all in the women's room. And
that's
my partner
right,
was very gregarious, and he had no problem going into a woman's room saying, oh, we can't change our baby. Do you mind? It's like, we're not looking. Can we use the woman's room and change it? Oh, yes. Oh, that's fine. And women could not have cared less. So he was, taking our son into women's rooms, changing diapers, using the facilities, you know, just fine. So we were in an airport and I had the baby and he had to go off to the restroom. And I waited. And a few minutes, he came back and he was beet red, just completely embarrassed. And for this man to ever be embarrassed was a big deal. And I was like, what happened? He goes, oh my God, I went to the restroom, and you know, I was in the stall and all of a sudden I heard women's voices. I'm like, what? He goes, yeah, I'm so used to going to the women's room, it didn't even occur to me. I was in the women's room and I'm sitting there going,
oh my God,
I don't have a baby.
So what did he do? He just sat there until it was empty?
Yeah. Which is why I was waiting so long
for him. Because
at the airport, it takes a while for that to happen.
Yeah, at an airport, yeah. That could take hours.
So anyway, I never thought that the end of or the latter days of LGBTQ rights was going to be around restrooms and wedding cakes.
Isn't it silly? It's so stupid. It's beyond stupid, and that's. But therein lies the basis for comedy. Calling out bullshit. You know, it's a wedding cake for crying out loud. It's just a wedding cake.
Go ahead.
No. Go ahead. I'll just ramble on.
Well, that's what I'm here for. So, well, speaking of rambling on, we have this has been hopefully a painless experience for you because we only have 3 minutes left, believe it or not.
Oh, my God. I just looked at the clock. That's incredible, Rob.
I know. We just make it so painless. So in those 3 minutes, how can people find you? Where are your shows? Where can they track you down and take in the Julia Scotti goodness?
You can find my schedule. It's always at www.juliascotti.com. And we are currently planning a tour for 2017. Hopefully we're going national. I'll be cutting a comedy CD in the spring. We're most likely going to do that in Seattle. And look for an upcoming documentary on my life. It's in production now.
Oh, fantastic. Ooh,
yeah.
That's exciting. That's very exciting. That one was sort of a surprise. I expected you to be cutting a CD, even though you hadn't told me that. But that doesn't surprise me. Now, what do you want to do? Would you like to do like a comedy series or do you want to stay strictly clubs?
No. My goal, I want a series, and we're developing on some ideas right now. In fact, the woman who's producing the documentary is also interested in taking a series to some network. It wouldn't be one of the big three because I'd feel too restricted there. But we are looking, at other platforms and, hopefully it'll be something unique and different and fun. Yeah.
Hey, I'm telling you, a series where you, Carly Fiorina's roommate, I think that's golden. So I do want to give one quick plug. Julia will be joining me on Out in Santa Cruz on outinsantacruz.com, KSCO.com on October 29th. So if you liked what you heard tonight, we are going to have a part two. They'll be different because Julia can't cuss, even though this was Julia unplugged, although she didn't really didn't unplug.
No,
much,
I
really.
Behaved. I was behaving.
Do you want to say a cuss word for everybody?
Fuck that.
There you go. And with that, thank you so much for joining us. Join us again next week. Buy Garrett's album, Blonde Jesus, on GarrettMiller.com. Got to give him a plug. He is winning awards all over the place still. Plus, he has a fabulous, and Julia, you got to hear this. He has a fabulous Witches Sisters on Blonde Jesus for Halloween. So if you need a Halloween anthem, we have it for you. Stay tuned next week. We will be here again with Rated LGBT Radio. Listen to me on outinsantacruz.com, Saturdays, 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And Julia, I adore you, and I'm so glad we get a part two.
Yeah, me too, Rob. Thanks for having me. I really had a great time.
Me. And we are almost out of here. So again, folks, listen next week, and definitely look for Julia's upcoming albums. And if you haven't heard, check out YouTube. There are some YouTubes there that you do not want to miss. Thanks, Julia, and we'll see you all next week.
Thank you.
And we're off the air.
Oh, okay. That went quickly.
I know it does, doesn't it? So, yeah.
It really does. I had a wonderful time. It was just really, really easy to talk to you.
Good. Well, I'm glad, and likewise, and I'm looking forward to next month or the end of
this
month.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
Great.
All right. Well,
and you have my contact information if you need anything, and this will be a recording. They just click on the link.
Okay. Can you send me the link when it's up?
I will. I'll have Garrett.
All right, great.
He's the tech guy. So yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. All righty. Well, thank you, Rob, so much. I really, really appreciate it.
Thank you. You too. And we will talk soon.
Okay. You have a wonderful night.
You too.
All right.